I wish to continue the talk on auto-suggestion and self-suggestion, we call it. The healing circles, when we develop, need not only prayer, but they need to use all of the faculties of the man. We need to use his suggestive ability, his mesmeric ability. The mesmeric ability is a charge of mana that can go into the body of the person who is being treated, and with a little suggestion planted there, and with a prayer to the high self, can be used to correct some trouble, to heal some condition. You might say that this approach is the healing done by the whole man, the three-self man, which we propose to undertake, and which, if we can get going, will make the whole activity of the Huna Fellowship real and lasting and expanding. I've been looking for some way in which I could encourage those of you who listen to feel the need, the necessity of using the different phases of prayer and suggestion and auto-suggestion. I have before me a book which has been loaned to me. It's out of print, I think, for quite a while. It's by C. Harry Brooks, and it's called The Practice of Auto-Suggestion by the Method of Emile Coué. Dr. Coué, as you remember, was famous for teaching us to make the suggestion to ourselves, every day, in every way, I am getting better and better. I remember a number of years ago that was being used all over the United States and England. It was being voiced in private and even openly and laughingly. And everything went fine, except that it didn't work for too many people. And it took the effect of being a fad and gradually was given up. But there was a reason why it didn't work. Only part of the method had been really put to use, had been really explained. Coué had stressed the fact in his work that if you tried too hard, if you tried to will yourself to be well, to make a suggestion hypnotically to improve your health, that you canceled your own effort. The will drew the attention of the low self from the thing that you were trying to handle. On page 17 of the book I mentioned, I read, Coué said, "You fatigue yourself. The greater the efforts you make, the more the ideas return, that is, the ideas of the illness or the trouble, and you will change all that easily and simply, and above all, without effort, through the thinking." Coué went on to say, "If you say, 'I want to do something,' your imagination replies, 'Oh, but you can't.' You must say, 'I am going to do it.' And if it is in the region of the possible, you will succeed." Over and over, he stressed the point that we must relax. We must open the subconscious and give it the suggestion or the thought of the wanted condition. But that we mustn't try, we mustn't make an effort. If we use the will of the middle self, then that cancels out the nature of the suggestion. He handles that time and time again. I read here on page 59, "If we can get the unconscious to accept the idea, realization follows automatically. The only difficulty which confronts us in the practice of induced auto-suggestion is to ensure acceptance. And this is a difficulty which no method prior to that of Emile Coué has satisfactorily surmounted. Every idea which enters the mind is charged to a greater or less extent with emotion. This emotional charge may be imperceptible, as with ideas to which we are indifferent. or it may be very great, as ideas which are closely related to our personal interests. All the ideas we are likely to make the subject of induced auto-suggestion are of the latter class, since they refer to health, energy, success, or some goal equally dear to our hearts. The greater the degree of emotion accompanying an idea, the more potent is the auto-suggestion resulting from it. Thus, in a moment of violent fright, it may give rise to effects which last a lifetime. This emotional factor also plays a large part in securing the acceptance. So far as one can see, the acceptance or rejection of an idea by the unconscious depends on the associations with which it is connected. Thus, an idea is accepted when it evokes similar ideas charged with emotion of the same quality. It is rejected when it is associated with contrary ideas, which are therefore contrary to their emotional charge. In the latter case, the original idea is neutralized by its associations, somewhat in the same way as acid neutralizes alkali. What he is trying to tell us here is that if the subconscious is not brought to believe and have faith that the new image is the right one, is the true one, is something that is coming to pass, then it will cancel it, like the acid and the alkali that he speaks of chemically. And the emotional charge that he speaks of is simply the mana, which has been charged into the thought form picture of the condition that we have and wish to get rid of, or the greater charge which we hope to put into the picture of the thing that we desire. The writer introduces his subject by saying, the clinic of Emil Coué, where induced autosuggestion was applied to the treatment of disease, was situated in a pleasant garden attached to his house at the quiet end of a street in Nancy. It was there that I visited him in the early summer of 1921 and had the pleasure for the first time of witnessing one of his consultations. We entered the garden from his little house shortly before 9 o'clock. In one corner was a brick building of two stories with its windows thrown wide open to let the air and sunshine. This was the clinic. A few yards away was a similar one-storied construction which served as the waiting room. Under the plum and cherry trees, now laden with fruit, little groups of patients were sitting on the garden seats, chatting together, enjoying the morning sunshine, while others wandered in twos and threes among the flowers and strawberry beds. The room reserved for the treatments was already crowded, but in spite of that, eager newcomers constantly tried to gain entrance. The windowsills of the ground floor were beset, and a dense knot had formed in the doorway. Inside, the patients had first occupied the seats which surrounded the wall, and then covered the available floor space, sitting on camp stools and folding chairs. Coué, with some difficulty, found me a seat, and the treatment immediately began. The first person he addressed was a frail, middle-aged man who was accompanied by his daughter. He had just arrived from Paris to consult him. The man had a bad case of nervous trouble. He walked with difficulty, and his head, arms, and legs were afflicted with a continual tremor. He explained that if he encountered a stranger when he was walking in the street, the idea that the latter would remark about his infirmity completely paralyzed him, and he had to cling to whatever support was at hand to save himself from falling. At Coué's invitation, he rose from his seat, took a few steps across the room. He walked slowly, leaning on a stick. His knees were half-bent, and his feet dragged heavily along the ground. Coué encouraged him with the promise of improvement. You have been sowing bad seeds in your unconscious. Now you will sow good seeds, he said. The power by which you have produced these ill effects will in the future produce equally good ones. The next patient was an excitable, overworked woman of the artisan class. When Coué inquired the nature of her trouble, she broke into a flood of complaints. describing each symptom with of voluble minuteness. "Madam," he interrupted, "you think too much about your ailments, and in thinking of them, you create fresh ones." Next came a girl with headaches, a youth with inflamed eyes, and a farm laborer incapacitated by varicose veins. In each case, Kuwei stated that autosuggestion would bring complete relief. Then it was the turn of a businessman who complained of nervousness, lack of self-confidence, and haunting fears. "When you know the method," said Kuwei, "you will not allow yourself to harbor such ideas." "I work terribly hard to get rid of them," said the patient. "You fatigue yourself. The greater the effort you make, the more the ideas return. You will change all that easily, simply, and above all, without effort." "I want to," the man interjected. "That's just where you're wrong," Kuwei told him. "If you say, 'I want to do something,' your imagination replies, 'Oh, you can't.' You must say, 'I am going to do it.' And if it is in the region of the possible, you will succeed." A little farther on was another neurasthenic, a girl. This was her third visit to the clinic, and for 10 days she had been practicing the method at home. With a happy smile and a little pardonable self-importance, she declared that she had already felt a considerable improvement. She had more energy, was beginning to enjoy life, ate heartily, slept more soundly. Her sincerity and delight helped to strengthen the faith of her fellow patients. They looked on her as a living proof of the healing which could come to them. Kuwei continued his questions. Those who were unable, whether through rheumatism or paralytic affliction, to make use of a limb were called on as a criterion of future progress to put on their maximum efforts. In addition to the visitor from Paris, there was present a man and a woman who could not walk without support, and a burly peasant, formerly a blacksmith, who for nearly 10 years had not succeeded in lifting his right arm above the level of his shoulder. In each case, Kuwei predicted a complete cure. During this preliminary stage of the treatment, the words he spoke were not in the nature of suggestions. They were sober expressions of opinion based on years of experience. Not once did he reject the possibility of cure. Though with several patients suffering from organic disease in an advanced stage, he admitted it was unlikely. To these he promised whatever, however, a cessation of pain, an improvement of morale, and at least a retarding of the progress of the disease. Meantime, he added, the limits of the power of autosuggestion are not yet known. Final recovery is possible. In all cases of functional and nervous disorders, as well as the less serious ones of an organic nature, he stated that autosuggestion, consciously applied, was capable of removing the trouble completely. It took Kuwei nearly 40 minutes to complete his interrogation. Other patients bore witness to the benefits that the treatment had already conferred on them. You'll notice that he'd been using a series of treatments, not expecting one treatment to do the whole work, but a series. And we must plan on having a series in our own healing circles. To continue the reading, a woman with a painful swelling in her breast, which the doctors had diagnosed, in Kuwei's opinion wrongly, as of cancerous nature, had found complete relief in less than 3 weeks' treatment. Another woman had enriched her impoverished blood and increased her weight by over 9 pounds. A man had been cured of varicose ulcer. Another, in a single sitting, had rid himself of the lifelong habit of stammering. Only one of the former patients failed to report an improvement. "Monsieur," said Kuwei, "you have been making efforts. You put your trust in the imagination, not in the will. Think you are better, and you will become so." Let me read that again. "You must put your trust in the imagination, not in the will. Think you are better, and you will become so." The main conclusions of Kuwei about his work and the theory were, every idea which exclusively occupies the mind is transformed into an actual physical or mental state, that is, which exclusively occupies the mind. The effort we make to conquer an idea by exerting the will only serves to make that idea more powerful. To demonstrate these truths, he requested one of his patients, a young anemic-looking woman, to carry out a small experiment. She extended her arms in front of her and clasped her hands firmly together with the fingers interlaced, increasing the force of her grip until a slight tremor set in. "Look at your hands," said Kuwe, "and think that you cannot open them. And you cannot. Now try hard to pull them apart. Pull hard. You find that the more you try, the more tightly they become clasped together." The girl made little convulsive movements of her wrists, really doing her best by physical force to separate her hands. But the harder she tried, the more her grip increased in strength, until the knuckles turned white with the pressure. Her hands seemed locked together by a force outside of her control. "Now think," said Kuwe, "I can open my hand." Slowly her grasp relaxed, and in response to a little pull, the cramped fingers came apart. She smiled shyly at the attention she had attracted and sat down. Kuwe pointed out that the two main points of his theory were thus demonstrated simultaneously. When the patient's mind was filled with the thought of "I cannot," she could not, in very fact, unclasp her hands. Further, the effort she made to wrench them apart by exerting her will only fixed them more firmly together. Now each patient was called on in turn to perform the same experiment. The more imaginative among them, notably the women, were at once successful. Several of the men, however, were not at once successful. The erstwhile blacksmith with the disabled arm was told to think, I should like to open my hands, but I cannot, and proceeded with difficulty to open them. "You see," said Kuwe with a smile, "it depends not on what I say, but on what you think." What were you thinking then?" The blacksmith hesitated and said, "I thought perhaps I could open them after all." "Exactly, and therefore you could. Now clasp your hands again and press them together." When the right degree of pressure has been reached, Kuwe told him to repeat the words, "I cannot, I cannot." As he repeated the phrase, the contracture increased, and all of his efforts failed to release his grip. "Now," said Kuwe, "for 10 years you have been thinking that you cannot lift your arm above your shoulder. Consequently, you have not been able to do so. For whatever we think becomes true for us. Now think, I can lift it." The patient looked a bit at him doubtfully. "Quick," Kuwe said in a tone of authority. "Think, I can, I can." "I can," the man said. He made a half-hearted attempt and complained of a pain in his shoulder. "Good," said Kuwe. "Don't lower your arm. Close your eyes and repeat after me as fast as you can. The pain passes, the pain passes." For half a minute, they repeated the phrase together, speaking so fast as to produce a sound like the whirring of a revolving machine. Meantime, Kuwe quickly stroked the man's shoulder. At the end of that time, the patient admitted that the pain had left. "Now think well that you can lift your arm," Kuwe said. The departure of the pain had given the patient faith. His face, which before had been perplexed and incredulous, brightened as the thought of power took possession of him. "I can," he said in a tone of finality, and without effort, he calmly lifted his arm to its full height above his head. He held it there triumphantly for a moment, while the whole company applauded and encouraged him. Kuwe reached for his hand and shook it. "My friend, you are cured." "It is marvelous," the man said. "I believe I am." "Prove it," said Kuwe. "Hit me on the shoulder." The patient laughed and dealt him a gentle tap. "Harder," Kuwe encouraged him. "Hit me harder, as hard as you can." His arm began to rise and fall in regular blows, increasing in force until Kuwe was compelled to call a stop. The man resumed his seat, still hardly able to comprehend what had occurred. Now and then he lifted his arm to reassure himself and whispered to himself in an awed voice, "I can, I can." A little farther on was seated a woman who had complained of violent neuralgia. Under the influence of the repeated phrase, "it passes, it passes," the pain was dispelled in less than 30 seconds. Then it was the turn of the visitor from Paris. When he had, what he had seen had inspired him with confidence. He was sitting more erect, there was a little patch of color on his cheeks, and his trembling seemed less violent. He performed the experiment with immediate success. I suppose that was the experience of putting his hands together in the hypnotic class. "Now," said Kuwe, "you are cultivated ground. I must throw out seeds in handfuls." This is very interesting because the Hawaiians, the kahunas, planted seeds. That was their word for the planting of a suggestion, to plant a thought And the word for thought also meant a seed. They planted the seed of the prayer or of the thought or the suggestion. He caused the sufferer first to stand erect with his knees slightly straightened, then asked him to think constantly, "I can," to place his entire weight on each foot in turn, slowly performing the exercise known as marking time. The space was then cleared of the chairs, and having discarded his stick, the man was made to walk to and fro. When his gait became slovenly, Kuei stopped him, pointed out the fault, and renewed the thought, "I can," causing him to correct it. Progressive improvement kindled the man's imagination. He took himself in his own hands. His bearing became more and more confident. He walked more easily, more quickly. His little daughter, all smiles and happy self-forgetfulness, stood beside him, uttering expressions of delight, admiration, and encouragement. The whole company laughed and clapped their hands. "After the sitting," said Kuei, "you shall come in my garden for a run." Kuei's manner was always quietly inspiring. There was no formality, no attitude of superior person. He treated everyone, rich and poor, with the same friendly solicitude. But within these limits, he varied his tone to suit the temperament of the patient. Sometimes he was firm, sometimes gentle, sometimes bantering. He seized every opportunity for a little humorous byplay. One might also say that he tactfully teased some of his patients, giving them the idea that their ailment was absurd and a little unworthy, that to be ill was as quaint and reprehensible a weakness as they could find. Indeed, the denial of the dignity of disease is one of the characteristics of the place. We can hardly deny that Dr. Kuei's suggestions had the force of what we now call hypnotic suggestion. He hadn't hypnotized his patients, but he had apparently the ability to make a powerful thought form of the corrected condition and to transfer that to the patient. And the patient, being convinced of the fact that the cure was possible, would accept that thought form. So in the healing circles, we have the same condition confronting us, or will have when we develop our circles. We will have the person so imbued and filled with the memory and the thought and the knowledge of his own illness that he will reject the idea, if he makes it himself, of the healed condition. But if it is given to him by someone like Dr. Kuei, somebody who is accustomed to giving suggestion, or by the group as a powerfully mana-filled picture of his healed condition, and if he can begin to react to it and can get faith that it is going to be true, then the healing can come along. If there's just a little improvement in one treatment, then there'll be a little more in the next, and so on. Kuei used to have a series of treatments. They weren't all as spectacular as the ones just described, and he had them come and go and treat gradually, every day, in every way. You're getting better and better was really the basic underlying point. Let me continue the reading here on page 24. Kuei now passed on the formulation of specific suggestion. The patient closed their eyes, that is, they relaxed, and he proceeded in a low, monotonous voice, doesn't this sound hypnotic, to evoke before their minds the state of health, mental and physical, they were seeking. You see, there he was making the charged thought form and giving it to them as a suggestion. And they were relaxed and were accepting it. As they listened to him, their alertness ebbed away. They were lulled into a drowsy state, peopled only by the vivid images he called up before the eyes of their mind. The faint rustle of the trees, the songs of the birds, the low voices of those waiting in the garden merged into a pleasant background on which his words stood out powerfully. This is what he said. The author now quotes, "You must say to yourself that all the words I am about to utter will be fixed, imprinted, and engraven in your minds. that you will remain fixed, that they will remain fixed, imprinted and engraven there, so that without your will or your knowledge, without your being in any way aware of what is taking place, you yourself and your whole organism will obey them. I tell you first that every day, three times a day, morning, noon, and evening, at mealtime, you will be hungry. That is to say, you will feel that pleasant sensation which makes us think and say, how I should like something to eat. You will then eat an excellent with excellent appetite, enjoy your food, but you will never eat too much. You will eat just the right amount, neither too much nor too little. You will know intuitively when you have had enough. You will chew your food thoroughly and transform it into a smooth paste before swallowing it. In these conditions, you will digest it well and feel no discomfort of any kind, either in the stomach or the intestines. Assimilation will be perfectly performed, and your organism will make the best possible use of the food to create blood, muscle, strength, energy, in a word, life. Since you have digested your food properly, the excretory functions will be normally performed. This will take place every morning immediately on rising, without your having recourse to any laxative medicine or artificial means of any kind. Every night you will fall asleep at the hour you wish and will continue to sleep until the hour at which you desire to awake the next morning. Your sleep will be calm, peaceful, and profound, untroubled by bad dreams or undesirable states of the body. You may dream, but your dreams will be pleasant ones. On awakening, you will feel well, bright, alert, eager, and ready for the day's tasks. If in the past you have been subject to depression and gloom and melancholy foreboding, you will henceforth be free from such troubles. Instead of being moody, anxious, and depressed, you will be cheerful and happy. You will be happy even if you have no particular reason to be so, just as in the past you were, without good reason, unhappy. I tell you even that if you have a serious cause to be worried or depressed, you will not be worried or depressed. If you have an impatient or ill-tempered, you will no longer be anything of the kind. On the contrary, you will be patient and self-controlled. The happenings which used to irritate you will leave you entirely calm and unmoved. If you have sometimes been haunted by evil and unwholesome ideas, by fears or phobias, ideas will gradually cease to occupy your mind. They will melt away like a cloud, as a dream vanishes when we awake. So will these vain images disappear. I add that all your organs will do their work perfectly. Your heart beats normally, and the circulation of your blood takes place as it should. The lungs do their work well, the stomach and intestines, the liver, the bile ducts, the kidneys, and the bladder all carry out their functions correctly. If at present any of these organs named is out of order, the disturbance will grow less day by day, so that within a short space of time it will have entirely disappeared and the organ will have resumed normal function. Further, if in any organ there is a structural lesion, it will from this day be gradually repaired, and in a short period will be completely restored. This will be so even if you are unaware that the trouble exists. I must also add, and it is extremely important, that if in the past you have lacked confidence in yourself, this self-distrust will gradually disappear. You will have confidence in yourself. I repeat, you will have confidence. Your confidence will be based on the knowledge of the immense power which is within you, by which you can accomplish any task which your reason approves. With this confidence, you will be able to do anything you wish to do, providing it is reasonable, and anything which it is your duty to do. When you have a task to perform, you will always think that it is easy. Such words as difficult, impossible, I cannot, will disappear from your vocabulary. In their place, you will be taking this phrase, it is easy and I can. So consider your work easy. Even if it is difficult to others, it will become easy for you. You will do it easily, without effort, and without fatigue. These general suggestions, the author says, were succeeded by particular suggestions referring to the special ailments from which Kuei's patients were suffering. Taking each case in turn, he allowed his hand to rest lightly on the head of the sufferers. And there you can see the transfer of the mana, the mana to charge and strengthen the patient. Taking each case in turn, he allowed his hand to rest lightly on the hand of the sufferer while picturing to their mind the health and vigor with which they would soon be endowed. Thus, to a woman with an ulcerated leg, he spoke as follows: henceforth, your organism will do all that is necessary to restore your leg to perfect health. It will heal rapidly. The tissues will regain their tone. The skin will be soft and healthy. In a short space of time, your leg will be strong and vigorous, and in the future will remain so. Each special complaint was thus treated with a few appropriate phrases. Kuei now explained to his patients that he possessed no healing power, had never healed a person in his life. They carried in themselves the instrument of their own well-being. The result that they had seen was due to realization on the part of each patient because of his thought. He had merely been an agent, calling the ideas of health into their mind. Henceforth, they could and must be the pilots of their own destiny. He then requested them to repeat, under conditions which will be defined later, the phrases which the phrase with which his name is associated. And here comes his famous phrase: day by day, in every way, I am getting better and better. The sitting was at an end. The patients rose and crowded around Kuei, asking questions, thanking him, shaking him by the hand. Some declared they were already cured, some that they were much better, others that they were sure that the cure would come to them in the future. It was as if a burden of depression had fallen from their minds. Those who had entered with minds crushed and oppressed went out with hope and optimism shining in their face. But Kuei waved aside the two insistent admirers and beckoned to the three patients who could not walk and led them to a corner of the garden where there was a stretch of gravel path running beneath the boughs of the fruit trees. Once more impressing on their minds the thought of strength and power, he induced each one to walk without support down this path. He now invited them to run. They hesitated, but he insisted, telling them that they could run, that they ought to run, that they had but to believe in their own power of thought that manifested in action. They started rather uncertainly, but Kuei followed them with persistent encouragements. They began to raise their heads, to lift their feet from the ground, to run with greater freedom and confidence. Turning at the end of the path, they came back at a fair pace. Their movements were not elegant, but people on the far side of 50 are seldom elegant runners. It was a surprising sight to see the three sufferers who had hobbled to the clinic on sticks, now covering the ground at a full 5 miles an hour and laughing heartily at themselves as they ran. The crowd of patients who had collected broke into a spontaneous cheer, and Kuei slipped modestly away, returning to the fresh company of sufferers who had collected in the waiting room to await him. The author, in discussing Kuei's theories and the work, says a rather interesting thing on page 96, which I wish to read to you. We have already seen that the dimensions of any obstacle, that is, obstacle to something we wish to do, depend at least as much upon our mental attitude toward it as towards its intrinsic difficulty. The neurasthenic who imagines he cannot rise from his bed cannot do so because this simple operation is endowed by his mind with immense difficulty. The great mass of normal people commit the same fault to a lesser degree. Their energy is expended partly in doing their daily work and partly in overcoming the resistance to their own minds. By the action of the law of reverse effort, the negative idea they foster frequently brings their efforts to naught, and the very exertions they make condemn their activities to failure. For this reason, it is necessary, before undertaking any task which seems to us difficult, to suggest that it is, in fact, easy. We relax, then we close our eyes and say quietly to ourselves, "The work I have to do is easy, quite easy. Since it is easy, I can do it, and I shall do it efficiently and successfully. Moreover, I shall enjoy doing it. It will give me pleasure. My whole personality will apply itself harmoniously to the task, and the result will be even beyond my expectations." We will dwell on these ideas, repeating them tranquilly and effortlessly. Soon our mind will become serene, full of hope and confidence. He's speaking of auto-suggestion there. Then we can begin to think out our method of procedure, to let the mind dwell on the means best suited to obtain our object. Since the impediments created by fear and anxiety are now removed, our ideas will flow freely. Our plans will construct themselves in the quiet of the mind, and we shall come to the actual work with a creative vigor and a singleness of purpose. He might well have added there that a little prayer to the high self for assistance would bring the third part of the man into the action and into the picture. The main thing which we must remember in giving ourselves self-suggestion is that we are already in possession of a very strongly determined picture of what we are going to become. We have made that with our breathing exercises and have made it ready as a memory. We put a charge of emotion of desire on it, and we're ready to recall that, simply and effortlessly to recall it, to present it to the subconscious. But in order to get the subconscious to accept it, it has to be relaxed. On page 77 of my book, Self-Suggestion, I have described the relaxation here. The original kahunas must have thought that anyone could relax or would know how to relax, for the word they used for relax was ho'olulu, which means to plant seeds, the symbol of planting the tiny forms of suggestion ideas in the low self. However, the kahunas, by this combining of meanings, left no doubt that the low self was to be relaxed. For lulu also means a relaxed condition. The first stealth step in bringing about the relaxation of the low self and the body and the mind is one of making the body comfortable, to relax it so that the muscles can let go. The mental picture is held over the low self once you're lying down or seated comfortably as a command to stop thinking, at least to slow down the thinking rate. The kahunas had a phrase for relax the mind, which translates relax the intestines, in which the intestines symbolized, as always, the low self. So we know that it is not the middle self which is to be relaxed. It is to increase its activities so as to use its will and to make the low self ease up on its activities. The use of the will to command the low self always has a little of the element of suggestion, as whether we realize it or not. We command the body to relax, and the involuntary muscles begin to let loose. The voluntary ones we can let loose ourselves. Usually we start a chain reaction when we are accustomed to relaxing. We start with the eyes and with the neck and the arms and then down the back and through the legs and relax one point after the other until the whole body is relaxed. Then we give it a push downward on the bed or the chair and say, "Let loose." And it lets loose quite nicely. And once we are relaxed, then the thing to do next is to recall the suggestion that we have already made. I have on page 83 a list of the steps taken The first step to be taken when you're going to use self-suggestion is to decide what you're going to suggest to yourself. Two, you think hard and make a strong mental picture of it. Three, you breathe hard, accumulate extra vital force while thinking hard about the suggested idea, and to charge the picture, the idea, with force, the mana. The fourth step is to relax the low self in mind and in body. Quiet it down. Five, speak the suggestion silently or aloud to it. That suggestion is simply a description of the mental state that you wish. You describe the health condition. You don't try to hammer it in as a suggestion. You simply call it to mind and depend upon the picture having enough mana impressed in it ahead of time to impress the low self and make it ready to react. The picture must be stronger than the picture of the ill health. And if you get into trouble with the picture of the ill health staring you in the face, so to speak, make it the day by day. Say, I am getting better day by day, little by little. Tomorrow and the next day, I will be better and better. You can phrase it to suit yourself, but the low self will accept the idea of a slow recovery, perhaps more easily than it will a swift one. If you have a friend who can also describe the picture, as we have seen Kuwei describing the condition of the proper working of the entire body, the friend, if they have a little practice, will have a certain power in their suggestion, and that will double the chance of having your own low self pick it up and react to it. Going back to my list, the seventh item is expect the low self to react. When you recall the suggestion, do it placidly until the next session, when you will again make a positive suggestion. That is, you will strengthen your original suggestion and have it ready, and then you will remember that as a positive picture of health or of whatever you wish. Eight, in case it becomes necessary or good to delay or even to give up a planned effort to accomplish some aim, explain the reason to the low self and make the mental picture of the project being delayed or even given up completely. Charge the idea and administer it as self-suggestion in the regular way. Do not let the effort go by default, lest the old suggestion structures worry the low self and cause a mental clutter. A mental house needs to be kept neat and clean and well-ordered at all times. And now, for at least the present, my aloha.